been on the road. That in itself is fascinating, don't you think?
It depends on your viewpoint. People say, how do you have such an unusual life? But on the other hand, this is what I've done since I was 20. So going on the road is where I live half the time, you know? And I almost feel like I belong there.
Do you travel in a bus or do you fly or drive?
Usually with most groups on the road for any length of time, like if there's several days, it'll be a bus trip. Even if it's Paul McCartney or Axl Rose and rock and roll bands, you're a slave to the bus schedule, which means you usually won't do more than 500 miles between cities. When you get to the western half of the country, the western two-thirds of America is where one-third of the people live. So that's west of the Mississippi. The eastern one-third is where two-thirds of the people live. So if you're working kind of close to the Mississippi, you can hit an awful lot of cities. I mean, St. Louis to Memphis, 3.5-4 hours. St. Louis to Kansas City is 4 hours. And you might do a date in Kansas City and then go down to Fort Smith, Arkansas. And quite often, when you're doing this kind of touring, days off on the road are nothing but expenses. These groups that go out and do the touring, for my band, Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, if we take a day off on the road, it's going to cost us about $4,500. And that's not very high, because when we're on a bus trip, it's one bus and it's a small crew, very efficient guys. But sometimes we'll go out and do 12 cities in 14 days. And it's hard to work on a Monday, unless you're in Canada and it's a special weekend, or things like that. So what happens in the music business is you become a slave to the bus and its schedule. You can't overdo the driver. And this is for anybody. There are overdrives, and that can happen, and the guy will get paid more money. But you put 6 or 8 guys on a bus, and they ride for 8 to 12 hours. It really gets to be a strange life. You'll get up and have breakfast in one place because it's 5 a.m. and you happen to be up and the bus is fueling. Then you all go back to my bunk. Then you get up and have lunch because you're there. And then you go do a radio interview at 3 o'clock and then sound check at 4 or 5. And then dinner backstage around 6, because you can't leave a concert venue and like run out to a restaurant where there might be a bunch of people that are waiting to go to the concert. You'll never get to eat. So you eat backstage. You do the show, and around midnight you head to the hotel and leave at 2 in the morning. I would say it's similar to being in the circus or vaudeville or something of that nature.
Do you think that you can settle down and have a regular life, mow the lawn, the picket fence? Do you? Is that part of your life at all?
I like being in a place where I can feel like there's some kind of home. I live in New York, and I know I've got my studio equipment here. I've got kitchen, living room. It's a nice little place. And I happen to be selling my Hollywood house because I'm done with Hollywood. But I don't think I can not perform, and I intend to do that, just like I decided when I was 18. I wanted to go see the world and see if I could do anything. Now, all these people that do this think that they make hit records or that they're special, but it all centers around to, I don't have a job. I get up in the morning, and I don't have to go to work. But I work for people that are listening, you people that are listening right now. You may never have seen me before or talked to me before or heard me before, so how do you know it's me? I am trying to make something that will get your attention, or that will, in getting your attention, might make your day a little more light or whimsical or amuse you or have you tell somebody about something that's good. You ought to hear what this guy played on such and such. That is my job, making recordings that hopefully stand out. And you know what's funny about this? None of the bands that have made hits really, after a while, don't know what they're doing. Because the audience is what determines if something's a hit. Because if that were true, then everybody that has made hits would be making them all the time. Britney Spears didn't understand that her audience is between 10 and 16 years old at one time. 5 years later was going to be between 16 and 21, and she's going to be 26. Well, they're not going to want to listen to a 26-year-old woman that they listen to when they're 13. They're going to look for new stuff, and the 12, 13, 14-year-old's not going to want to listen to somebody that's 26. That's the next generation. She made some records that reached a certain age group, and they're great dance records and some really good pro recordings. But I don't think she really realized what she was making. Now, you take somebody like Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, you take certain rockers, they understand that they need to keep being productive and making new things. Kenny Rogers, for instance, has a gospel album that's just come out recently. Doesn't matter what people say. Oh, he sings about wine, women, and songs. Doesn't matter. He's got a gospel bent. And I've known Kenny for, gosh, 40 years probably. And I watched him when the first edition was just happening. And he was signing checks on the back of his bass amp in 1973 to pay the bass player and believing in what he was doing. This is before he had his own Kenny Rogers hits. Now, other people have gone on and done that same kind of thing. Eric Clapton, rock and roll. Then out comes the acoustic version of Layla and a whole new career. As long as you give people something to follow, they will have somewhere to go with you. And that's the fortunate thing about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, why we are in our 45th year, and the 44th was probably one of the best.
One of the lovely things that I was thinking about was Kenny Rogers' the CD that he's releasing through Cracker Barrel. I was sitting in Cracker Barrel recently, and I was listening to the Grascals.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe how people love it. And as I'm standing there waiting for my friends to come back from wherever, the ladies' room or wherever, I remember that almost everyone that went through that checkout was buying the CD.
Yeah.
So I know they sell music. The clerk was telling me that. I almost always either sell the CD by itself or along with the check when they come to check out.
Your question is?
A restaurant. And it's so successful moving music. That's fascinating.
The thing that's happened with the record industry, calling it music an industry is a strange thing, but it is. It's a record business. The thing about the record business in its current state is going after non-traditional selling points. But the non-traditional points have always been there. They just are more important than ever. There's always been truck stops and national parks, grocery store specials, but it kind of got overblown in a sense with huge record stores. It had a huge overhead. When you're moving a thing that is discretionary income and it takes so much to stock a store to make money, it's an incredibly difficult business. It's not like a grocery store where everybody's going to have to eat. You're supplying something that is a discretionary product that has to have a perceived value. Now, the thing that's good about Cracker Barrel, there's about 350 or 400 of them, and if they're offering something that is in tune to a particular audience, they're going to say, hey, I haven't seen a record store in a long time. This is cool. I'll buy this. If you're watching TV and there's an ad for a collection of things, well, it's easy to buy that. There's ways to get music nowadays, downloading, etc., but it's more difficult than ever to market it, to let people know it's out. And I think it used to be easier. There were fewer players and there were fewer outlets. There was usually two or three major radio stations in a given city, and there was three network TV stations. If you got on one of the shows, a lot of people were going to see you. Now, with 400 channels and the Tonight Show drawing, well, what, 20% of what it used to, and different things, it's very hard to find the spot. And certain things don't work like they used to. Mr. Bojangles became a hit in the top 10, probably because of a Catholic girls' school.
How did that come about? That you have to explain.
Thank you. Bojangles was out in around its 20th week. It had gone up and down the charts of 18 to 19, 19 to 15, 15 to 17, 17 to 14. And it was just kind of dancing around in the top 20. We were told by the record company that it was probably over because it's been out for 20 weeks and the average life of a record is 12 weeks. It had already outlasted two Jackson 5 number one songs that came and went like 8 and 10 weeks each. And if we played a Catholic girls' school in Manhattan, it might get to the top 10. And the reason for that was, is the man that programmed that school, his daughter went to the girls' school. Now, here we are going, oh, geez, we got a top 20 record. But nobody wants to say they have a top 14 record. You really aspire for the top 10. Even if it's only number 10, you can still say top 10. So here we are getting ready to play the lunchroom at lunchtime at a junior high school. And I have nothing against Catholics, girls, or schools, or lunch. And I asked the sister that came in around 11:30, do you boys need anything? I says, well, I'm just curious, sister, who else has played your school? Oh, this year we had the Jackson 5. Boy, those boys are talented. And we also had, let's see, who else? Oh, Paul Simon. What a fine singer. And last year, Mr. John Lennon was here. He's a nice boy. And I told her we had to get ready for an important show. We played the show, did our 45 minutes for the girls' lunch. 2 days later, ABC added the record. Now, since ABC added the record in New York, that meant BCN in Boston would now add it, as would WLS in Chicago. And it was already on Quixi in Atlanta, the big gun down in the southeast. But this helped us get Memphis. I can't remember the Memphis station right now. But it made Bojangles go into the top 10.
A girls' school.
And the fact that her father programmed the most powerful station in the country, and that gave it the qualification for other stations that were just below that, that were needed by Billboard magazine to see that they had airplay, to say, okay, it's top 10. And it also kept it on the charts another 14 weeks.
Musicians have told me that certain men and women would go from radio station to radio station and pay, or rather bribe, DJs to play records. Is that true?
I'm not sure there's any place where that doesn't exist. And it sure does in the drug world. That's why some doctors quit being doctors, as they get tired of the bribes that drug companies put them through to make them or get them to push drugs. Yeah, there were promotion people that were hired, and you'd give a DJ $500, or people would, or something. Sometimes it was an illegal situation. But it's not the only thing that determines it. You can't force the public to like something. Sometimes, I'm sure there were times that would kill a record quick because it got played and nobody called, and the money... no amount of money would make it last. It had to be liked. But yes, there were promotion, there's independent promotion people you hire, and there was a time when you would, radio stations would get things, but they get it in a business way. You know, we're going to buy ads on your station for the concert this act is doing if you increase the airplay. Now, what's unusual about that? We'll buy a bigger ad for the concert if you give the artist that we're bringing in a couple of weeks a feature story. Yeah, you know, it's trade out. It's things like that.
I remember when I worked for papers that the person that went out to see the end client was not the features editor or the travel editor. I was writing travel pieces. The person who went out to see them was someone from the advertising department. And I remember how craftily they worded the expectation that if you really wanted to see that spread and that lovely story they'd written with those great photos that they had taken, that they expected you to buy advertising. They didn't expect you to not buy advertising or to ignore that aspect of the business. And I noticed that once the advertising contract was signed, the article was printed. Eureka.
Yeah. Well, the newspapers have always had trouble staying in business, and they have to be creative. And it happens often where there's a kickback or something. I'm not saying it's the best way to do business.
I had a wonderful conversation with someone. And you know what, John? I'm going to name names. Why not? Who cares? I had a wonderful conversation with someone from the Orlando Sentinel. And it was said to me, because I worked there when I came from New York City, I couldn't find a job, so I took a job there. My mother suggested, call Orlando Sentinel, and I did. And they gave me a job in the sales room because there was nothing else. And trust me, I mean, they're so afraid of everything and everyone, and here they were already filing for bankruptcy. And I asked them how we would get a write-up to get promotion for the website, and they gave me the instructions. Everyone had to be identified, phone numbers, cell phone numbers next to their names. I followed their instructions to the letter. Sent it in, nothing. Next month, sent it in, nothing. Third month, I said, okay, what's up? We have a music icon, John McEwen. We have the 2011 Pulitzer Prize nominee in history. Wrote that book on Fallujah. It's like the biggest book ever.
Yeah.
They said, the thing is, you have a lot of people there that we don't. And you may be a small internet radio station, but they're there, and they're not here with us. And we just filed for bankruptcy. Why should we promote you? Explain that to me. And we had a good chuckle. And that was the end of it. I've never asked them again. But they work there. Yes, you know you work there. And that was the response. Why would we promote you when you apparently have good guests, you have good stories, good conversations, good interviews, the best music ever, and we don't? I took it well. I took it like a compliment, really.
You should. Yeah. The thing about the banjo that's weird, it sounds good if you just do that. Yeah. That's okay too. Anyway, just simple little song. So what was that was? That's a style called Frailing. Where you're kind of brushing and playing at the same time. Then there's bluegrass. You know, things that are more like eighth notes one after another. And then there's classical. You know, things that you can play like that. Anyway, I'm going to start playing this thing today because of you.
Well, you inspired me in everything you just did. I did, because I lost.
I sense that, because it's the only time you've been quiet that long.
Because you didn't tell me you were going to tell me all those important things and mention all those great names and all your experiences after the recording. That's so unfair. You should have said all of that during the interview.
Ruthie, here's a funny thing about it. When we hang up, I'll probably go downstairs and start talking this. I'll just keep it going to my neighbor. He loves to hear stuff.
Oh, no.
And then, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Just waiting for Brian Williams to come on. Doesn't that really, somebody's got to slap the media along the side of the head and say, come on, I know it's a bad thing that happened in Tucson, but, oh, the country, there's always been problems. Remember Timothy McVeigh, or the guy in Austin in the tower, or the McDonald's in San Diego, or have you watched the news about the Tucson thing?
Of course.
The guy, well, I don't know. Some people don't, some do. The guy was nuts.
He was unstable, absolutely.
Different world. He didn't hear enough banjo. I think that's part of it. What did the British do after the V2 rockets had bombed the crap out of their town? Oh, we got to get that table dusted off. We got to get to the play. It's starting in about an hour, and we just have time to eat. Move that boulder that fell in my cheese, please.
That's the way to live. That is the way to live.
Instead of the constant selling of fear. I don't think there's any terrorists. That's my problem. I think there's bad guys and criminals and stupid people that are being manipulated, but I'm not terrified. So if a guy sets off a bomb, I get mad. I don't get terrified. Is that, am I wrong here? I don't know.
No, but, I think many, many Americans share your sentiment. And they should get, and they should get angry. They should get angry and take action instead of wringing their hands.
They need to listen to more banjo. I'll go along with you on that.
They have to listen to some banjo.
Trying to change the world five strings at a time.
What a lovely thing to say. You've probably said that a million times, haven't you?
It's on my website.
Oh, well, I can't thank you enough for this one. This close is better than the first one.
Do you have my actual phone number?
No, you never gave that to me.
Do you have a pen, or should I put it in my... I'll put it in this email I'm sending to you.
I would love it. And,
I've had problems with Skype. I mean, I had to go to Google and Google Skype and have it sign on, and then somehow my password had changed, and I lost the application. I tried to download the new one, but you already have an account. Well, yeah, but I can't open your stupid Skype because I can't get to the application.
I understand. I've had similar difficulties.
Almost like it's gotten too big.
No. Yes.
I bet you and Zuckerberg could hold a conversation. Is that, would I be off base thinking that?
A Facebook kid?
Yeah.
I haven't forgotten that application, and I don't care if people say, oh, that's politically incorrect, don't say that. We know. If you're in technology at any given point in the last 30 years, well, that was Harvard's. He took off with it. And you can't really patent an idea. An idea is an idea, and anybody can come up with a new pet rock.
What I liked about it in the movie, I thought a good point was made when he looked. Did you see the movie Social Network?
No, I didn't. I did not watch
the movie. I can tell that you might not want to see it. But when he says, okay, if I stole it, you write the code. I'm waiting. Tell me what it is. And nobody could do it. So
I'm of the belief that it belonged to the universities, and he took off with it.
I was listening.
I have no stock in that company. I have no horse in that race.
Well, I sure like what you're doing with this situation. I'm going to go look for it.
Thank you, John. It won't be up yet because I want to clean it up.
Is there stuff that's like archived and sitting there?
Oh, yeah. I did a wonderful interview with the Bushels. They provided the music for a short talk. I think it was maybe 12 or 13 minutes with a gal who works for the public relations office for Firefly Vodka. Sweet Tea Vodka, and they have a song about sweet tea, so they contributed their song to promote the company's Sweet Tea Vodka, and it's just adorable. And we added the bushels to it, and it's just so cute. I also interviewed Paulo Coelho for an hour, talk about the fact that I don't know what I'll be doing in the future. I know I'll be peddling Paulo Coelho's books in China, and we had a good laugh about that. And we talked about the fact that Google established itself to compete with Baidu. Baidu is the established China-based search engine. Google left Network Solutions, and GoDaddy had no choice but to leave a few months later, since their revenue was based directly on Google. When they didn't succeed, they all left. When I came up with the idea of how about free everything and just a $35 domain name, in early 2010, Google left, Network Solutions left, and then GoDaddy left.
I don't understand why I can't take my computer to the Beijing Hilton and sign on to Google, which you're telling me I couldn't.
You cannot.
But I could get to my own web page?
No, you cannot.
Oh, I can't?
No.
Oh, well, then that makes sense. They've got the phone lines tied up, and they're not connected to the worldwide net.
Right. They're connected to ChinaNet.
And nobody from the outside can get in?
Correct.
But Facebook does.
No, it doesn't. Facebook only gets to the pages that have been sanctioned and accepted and permitted by the Chinese government.
I think a lot of people, such as me, it's like I can get in the Maserati and put the key in the ignition, and I know when the road's wet, I can still go fast, and it's got this kind of steering. I don't know anything about the tires or the engine. I just turn the wheel and push on the gas.
So okay, let me explain.
It'd be nice to understand some more about... I don't know that I can over the phone.
Yes, you can. I can explain it to you in minutes. Imagine that there's an invisible wall between Canada and the United States. You and I can go to the Canadian border and stand there and yell to our friends across the way in Canada. And they can yell back, and we can hear each other. However, we cannot electronically see each other's web pages. That is true for China. China can see all the web pages permitted by the Chinese government, but they cannot see our American web pages or European web pages, no.
What does this wall represent in this analogy? There's an invisible wall that
the
we can...
sensors. These sensors have certain standards that they go
what
by.
What is the yelling? We can yell across it to each other.
We can send email, but we cannot openly show each other's web pages, no. Because the government has a stop so that they cannot see web pages outside of China that they don't permit.
Going through the phone lines.
Yeah, only a few people have that ability. But what we do is we follow all their criteria and don't mention things that would offend them that they would find annoying. And because they know that we follow their criteria, that's my little niche. That's what I've been sitting on.
I kind of get something from that. But what I'm talking about is further than that. How does Google, in three quarters of a second, find 170,000 references to blah, blah, blah over the entire Internet? What is the Internet? Where does it exist, really? Is it the phone line? I mean, I get it, kind of. They go to everybody that's plugged in. But are they plugged in all the time? Is there so many data banks out there now that allow the free flow of this information for Google to tell me I have 175,000 references to me and I can go look at them and they'll open up to things? How in the hell did that kid figure out to do that in under a second?
Google was very well financed and has been evolving in the last 15 years. It's been growing and expanding and morphing and getting bigger. And one of its business models, it's almost criminal. Google is the only company in the world, in the history of the world, that offers you absolutely no guarantee of anything. And it states that anything you buy from them at whatever stage of development is still beta, still under test mode. And it offers no guarantees. And if you don't pay for all of it before they deliver it, they don't have to deliver it. And
deliver what?
Whatever electronic device you buy or application, anything you buy from them.
Oh. Well, they just don't want people coming to the store saying, replace this.
Well, everything is beta. and nothing.
Isn't that basically caveat emptor?
They don't replace anything. They don't supply anything. They guarantee nothing, and they've gotten away with it. They have no customer guarantee of any kind. Everything they're selling you is a test.
Yeah, but caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Don't go buy something unless you understand all the conditions.
Right.
So I bought stuff that didn't work, and there's no way to take it back.
Yeah.
I mean, 30 years ago.
Buyer beware assumes that you know enough about electronics and the internet to be able to make a comparison and an intelligent, informed choice. But that's not the case. Before a product hits the market, it's already obsolete. And it's to the point now where they're releasing products and software that you need an engineering degree to set up. They can't get the individual person to just load software. I was just trying to work wirelessly, and my goodness, how annoying that is. Even cable television, when you call them up, now they want you to tell them what's wrong over the phone so they can diagnose it, and then tell you, hold this button down, then do that, and push this, and hit this reset. If I wanted to be a technician, I would have studied for that. But
yeah.
No, here I am paying them per month. And when it comes to fixing the thing, I'm the one who has to fix it, and they still get paid for the service.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and ask them to reimburse you for the downtime.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I've tried this a few times when I turned in the car at the airport. Like, how much was, I rented this car. It said it was $32 a day, but then there's this $2 tire recovery fee, and a $4 road tax, and then the $6 airport over surcharge, and you didn't tell me about that. You said it was 35 a day, and now it's like 58 a day. But that's okay, because I didn't tell you I charge a $10 drop-off fee to bring it back. they've never given me the credit,
And they put a hold on your credit card, too.
Yeah, and they get the benefit of millions of dollars of equity on holds probably somehow.
Absolutely. So those are our minor complaints in life. If that's what we've got to complain about, we're not.
Oh, I don't mind that stuff, really. I mind things like going to the theater and having it say senior ticket, 62 and over. And I told the girl, I says, look, I'm a little past 62, but I'm not over, okay? Could you say 62 and better or above? Not over. Give me a senior ticket and a couple lilies.
These are pearls. Why didn't you tell me these things during the interview? I would have loved them.
I don't know. I got to take notes myself. Remember what I said, because it's going over well.
Well, I'm going to use all of this. You know I am.
Oh, well, you use me, baby. Okay, great. Cut that out. Lo mismo para mí.
Sí. Y si quieres que yo entreviste otra persona que conoces, simplemente dale mi número. Dice que
I'll
me llame.
But the phone number I don't have. I don't. Well, yes, I do.
Sí, yo te lo di. 321-285-NEWS.
Do you know where the word news came from?
No, dime. Tell me. Where?
Northeast, west, and south.
Is that right?
I believe so.
Or did you make that up? Because it sounds
good. No, I've heard that when I was 12. Well, maybe not. But
okay. How cool is that? Northeast, west, and south.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you down the road here.
Thank you so much. You were a delight.
Oh, thank you. So were you.
And call me back when you have someone that you want me to interview. I'd love to.
I'm going to send an email to Rusi today.
Thank you. And if you do something interesting and something newsworthy, something interesting, call me and tell me. We'll record it and we'll load it.
I'm going to have a turkey burger in a little while, but I don't think that qualifies.
That doesn't qualify, John. That's not it. I mean, someone remarkable dies in your arms. Something like that.
Okay. The next thing I'm going to hear on our call is, wait. When I hang up. Oh.
Okay. I'll hang up first so you can hear it, all right?
Oh, I can hear it when I do it. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.